Mr. Goodman! Mr. Goodman! Fetch a policeman! Run away!
Please come back! Let's just talk!
No, it's too late for that!
And we're both dead men!
Willie's Wild Oats by Jack Gratis, with Chris Harris as Andy Bowman. Willie's Wild Oats.
Months of nagging my editor, Mr. Green, for a chance to prove I could do more than report on local vestry meetings for the Bayswater Times, finally bore fruit. He allowed me to interview the man many regard as the pioneer of the large departmental store in England, Mr. William Whiteley. I met Mr. Whiteley in his private office at the shop in West London which bears his name during the busy January sales. He was a short man, stout with bristling side whiskers, and the appearance of one who'd lived his life to the full.
Mr. Whiteley, sir, you call yourself the universal provider. May I ask why?
Oh, because it's the truth. I provide all the world with what the world wants, you know. I said everything. Except milk, of course.
Huh? But why not milk?
Ah, that would mean Sunday trading.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That I'm opposed to. You know, I have a staff of over 6,000. Over 6,000. I'd not wish a single one of them to miss the opportunity of attending church and seeking God's guidance and solace.
Cool. Well, how long have you been in the business?
Oh, come this March 1907, it'll be 45 years.
Really? 45 years? May we regard you as the pioneer of the big store in England, then?
Oh, yes, I think I may modestly claim this distinction. You know, young man, there's not a thing that we can't do for our customers. I bank for them, I insure their lives and property, I ship them abroad for the good of their health, I make them rich beyond the dreams of avarice. That's through our brokerage department, you know. And finally, we bury them if they ask us to do so. Now, what do you think of that, eh?
Well, it's all very impressive, sir.
Impressive, I'd say it is, eh? One of your other chaps called me Atlas.
Atlas?
Yeah, Atlas, with the globe on my shoulders. Mind you, I'm an old Atlas now, but...
What are you, 75?
Well, that's correct, yes. I passed the allotted span of man's life.
And when do you plan to retire, then, sir?
Well, that's what my family asked me. I tell them that they'll have to carry me out of here, feet first.
Hey, have you made any resolutions, then, sir, for 1907?
Oh, I'm glad you asked me that, because I believe, you know, that a man should take stock of his life every year, learn by his mistakes, always try to improve himself right up to his very last day. And so I've resolved to be thoroughly honest in thought and in word and deed. Not to condemn anybody before hearing their version of the matter, you know, and to help those who try to help themselves. And finally, you know, to let my conscience have fair play as my guide. Oh, and one other.
What's that then, sir?
That's to be careful not to do anything to injure my health.
Well, you've got to take care of that. God, perishing out there. Here, give us a pint, Liz.
Coming up, Andy.
God.
Your interview with Mr. Whiteley. I liked him a lot.
Oh, come on, hurry up.
There. That'll warm you up.
God, that's better. Well, of course, only a start. It's about time, too. I mean, 18 months I've been on that rag. This is the first real piece of writing Mr. Green's ever let me do.
Don't you worry, Andy. One of these days you'll have your name in one of the big newspapers. Just you wait and see.
Yeah, but when, Liz? When? I'm already 22. I mean, at this rate, I'll be an old man before I get to Fleet Street.
You'll do it. I know you will.
Oi, Liz! You have other customers, you know. Man could die of thirst waiting for you to say it.
I'm coming, Mr. Moffat. I'd better go before he kicks up a fuss. Keep smiling, Andy.
Yeah, you too, Liz.
Yeah, and you heard, Whiteley's been shot.
What? Who do you say?
William Whiteley's been shot, right in his own shop.
Well, is he dead?
I don't know. There's police everywhere. Doctors, it's pandemonium.
Who shot him, do you know?
Complete stranger. No one's ever seen him before.
Liz, I'm off. I can't miss a chance like this.
Whoever did it, I'd like to shake his hand.
Hush, Mr. Moffat. Don't talk like that.
The old buzzard had it coming to him.
Please.
Just stop right there, young man. I'm not allowed to let anyone...
Oh, come on, Sergeant. You know me. Andy Bowman, Bayswater Times.
Where's your Mr. Parker? He's usually sent on this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, this time I got here first. Is Mr. Whiteley still alive?
Two bullets in his head? Not likely. The one who shot him is, just about.
Why? What happened to him?
After he shot Mr. Whiteley, he turned a gun on himself. What a mess he made of it. Took half his face off by the looks of it. Hang on. They're taking him out. Clear the way for the stretcher, please. Clear the way there.
I say, old chap, what's your name?
Cecil Turner. Let me sleep. All I want to do is sleep.
Leave him be. You can see he's in a bad way. Let the stretcher through.
Oh, I see Inspector Fuller over there. Do you mind if I have a word with him?
Hey, stop. Stand back. Stand back, the rest of you. Keep back.
Mr. Whiteley told me to go for a policeman.
Mr. Goodman, you must try to take it slowly.
Yes.
You're Mr. Whiteley's senior clerk, so you must have been the one who let this stranger in to see Mr. Whiteley, yes?
I was. But, you see, he said he was from Sir George Lewis. Sir George used to be Mr. Whiteley's solicitor, so I thought it was all right. And Mr. Whiteley seemed quite satisfied when I told him.
And you're sure you've never seen him before?
Quite sure.
And the name Cecil Turner means nothing to you?
No, nothing.
Same.
They were together in the office for only a few minutes, and then Mr. Whiteley came rushing out with the other man behind him. Mr. Whiteley told me, as I said, to go and fetch a policeman, but before I could go, the other man said something like, we're both dead men, and shot him twice. Oh, it was horrible, Inspector.
Yeah.
Poor Mr. Whiteley never had a chance. He fell there, where all that blood is. And then the other man put the gun to his head and...
Excuse me, Inspector. I couldn't help overhearing.
Oh, who the hell are you? I said no one was to come in.
Andrew Bowman, Bayswater Times.
Reporters? Already? Look, I'm busy now. You'll get your chance later on.
Yeah, but look, while I'm here, can't you tell me anything more?
You'll have to wait till I'm ready to make a statement. Now get out, or I'll have you charged with obstruction.
Die, Chronicle! Get your day, Chronicle! William Whiteley murdered! Shot down in his own office by an unknown killer! Get your day, Chronicle!
Well, what do you think of my report of the murder, Mr. Green? Will you use it?
No. We'll just have his obituary. As editor, I shall write it.
Oh, but look, I've worked half the night to get it in time.
No one asked you to do that.
But what about the man who shot him? Oh, aren't we going to try and find out about him? I mean, why he did it?
Tabloid rubbish. We're a family newspaper.
Yeah, but it's such a good story. It's right on our doorstep.
We're above muckraking, Berman.
Oh, Mr. Green, come...
I know you're reaching to make a name for yourself, but you'll not do it at Mr. Whiteley's expense. He was a great man and a local benefactor. So we'll show our proper respect to him and his family.
Well, what about the funeral?
Well, we'll have to report on that, of course. Edged in black. I'd love to write it myself, but I'm too busy. So you can do it. Bound to be a fine show.
Here comes the first carriage with the coffin.
Who's in the one behind it?
His wife and sons.
Then they're worth a pretty penny now. They say he left over £1 million to charity.
Kind and generous man.
Aye. We'll never see his like again.
Seldom has public feeling for a private citizen been more clearly demonstrated than at the funeral of Mr. William Whiteley last Wednesday. The tragedy by which he met his death and the mystery still shrouding that deed of blood aroused enormous interest. But among the many thousands lining the streets on that bitterly cold morning, with the closing of all business houses in the area, and in the presence of leading businessmen at the church and cemetery, there was ample evidence of a far deeper emotion than mere curiosity, and of a widespread respect for a man whose success made his name a household word throughout the globe.
That was was born in 1831 in a village near Wakefield in Yorkshire. I left school at 14. I spent 2 years on my parents' farm. And during this time, I had a thorough insight into good Yorkshire farming, which was of great service to me later on when I started my own farm as part of my business. But life wasn't all work and no play. I was very fond of horses and riding and also shooting, too. And I think I can safely say that there wasn't a better rider or shot in Yorkshire than myself. Members of the hunt were very good and very proud of me, because they thought of me as a real good sportsman, and though I was only 16 at the time, they always took care that when we stopped at the nearest gentleman's house, I was supplied with the usual crust of bread and piece of cheese and an horn of your good old home-brewed ale. Sundays, though, I devoted my leisure time to Bible classes. And what I learned from my teacher then has stayed with me all the years of my life. Never a day passes without my thinking of some precept regarding good and moral behavior. But I was a restless young man, you know. A draper was what I wanted to be. And after visiting London for the Great Exhibition in 1851, I made up my mind I'd come back and I'd make my fortune. And I'm proud to say I've carried out my ambition.
Man that is born of woman hath but a short time to live. He cometh up and is cut down like a flower.
With money I'd saved, I bought one shop, and then soon I had a number of shops all along Westbourne Grove. I realized that to succeed, I couldn't relax attention for a single moment. So my business became my sole hobby, my only pastime. Oh, I never let up. No holidays for me, no trips to the sea at weekends, no. Today, young people think they can have all they want without work. Ooh, it weren't like that for me, nor for my staff. But I was a fair employer, and they respected me for it. I never had any trouble. I think I can say without fear of contradiction that they all regarded me as they would their own father.
Upon his coffin of polished oak lay 3 floral tributes. The one from his wife, Mrs. Harriet Whiteley, was in the form of a harp with a broken string.
To take unto himself the soul of our dear brother here departed, earth to earth, ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
And if I were to give a bit of advice to a young man starting in business for himself, I'd say, add your conscience to your capital.
After the coffin was lowered into the earth between banks of flowers, the mourners passed in single file, casting a farewell look of sorrow upon all that was left of a man who will long be mourned by all who knew him and regretted by thousands more.
All been very patient, so now I'll give you your story.
Inspector Fuller's enjoying himself.
Can you blame him? The biggest case to come his way, and he doesn't even have to hunt for the killer.
Yeah,
the man who shot Mr. Whiteley is under police surveillance in St. Mary's Hospital, Paddington. This morning, an operation was performed on him to remove his right eye and 3 pieces of the bullet with which he shot himself. His condition is serious, but no longer critical.
But who is he?
Yeah, and where'd he come from?
Yeah. Gentlemen, you'll be pleased to hear that Mr. Whiteley's assailant has been positively identified by his landlord. To gain entry to Mr. Whiteley, he used the name Cecil Turner. But we've ascertained that, in fact, his real name is Rayner. Horace Rayner. He's 29 years of age, married with 2 children. He's had a somewhat checkered career and is presently in grave financial difficulties. We found on his person only 1 shilling in cash, a watch chain, no watch, and 19 pawn tickets.
Inspector Fuller, I've interviewed Mr. Whiteley and I know how difficult it is to get to see him.
How did this fellow Rayner manage?
Well, he said he was from Mr. Whiteley's solicitor, Sir George Lewis. But we've checked with Sir George and he tells us he ceased to act for Mr. Whiteley about 15 or more years ago.
Have you found any connection between Mr. Whiteley and the murderer?
No, none at all. We searched through all the deceased's private papers and there's nothing there to connect the two of them.
Then why do you think he did it?
And he did it. And that's all we're concerned about for the present. So thank you, gentlemen, thank you. And good day.
Inspector, will Rayner live?
Oh, yes. Long enough for us to hang him.
What do you have, Mr. Parker, then?
Come, Andrew. As your senior by many years, I outrank you. So I buy the drinks.
I'm sorry.
When you're a famous Fleet Streeter, you can buy mine. Beer, is it?
Thanks very much.
2 pints, Liz, please.
It's a funny business, don't you think?
What is, Andrew?
Well, the Whiteley murder, of course.
Well, I don't know about that. Seems to me to be a classic case of the desperado will stop at nothing to get what he wants.
Well, Rainer didn't look like a desperado to me.
How many of them are you seen in your time, Andrew?
Your drinks, gentlemen.
Many thanks, Liz. Now, look at the facts, Andrew. This Rainer fella had a gun on him.
Self-protection?
He was penniless. No, he went out determined to rob someone. He passed Whiteley's. It was full of shoppers with the sales, lots of cash, changing hands. Perfect target. He confronted Whiteley in his office, demanded money, but Whiteley was a game old bird, so Rayner shot him, then, realising his game was up, he tried to shoot himself and failed. Simple.
All right, yeah, perhaps, but look, there's just one or two things that puzzle me. Why did he call himself Cecil Turner? And how did he know Whiteley had once consulted Sir George Lewis?
Yes. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps he knew something about Mr. Whiteley. We don't know.
Andrew, my boy, take the advice of an old reporter. If you want to succeed on the Bayswater Times, we'll keep away from scandal. Mr. Green's terrified of upsetting our readers.
Oh, to hell with Mr. Green. I can't let a story go like that. I mean, it could be my big chance. Right, then, I'll find someone who will.
You could be putting your job in jeopardy.
Look, Mr. Parker, I've no intention of staying on the Bayswater Times the rest of my life.
Can't say I blame you.
Look, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
No. You know. You're right. My trouble was I lacked your ambition. I always did what I was told and I've nothing to show for it. No, Andrew, you write what you like. And I'll tell you what you must do. I'm this old friend on the Daily Chronicle. Name's Becklow. Send him your reports. He'll have his own staff working on the story, of course, but if you've something he can use, he will and pay you for it.
You really think so?
No harm in trying.
But what about Mr. Green? What if he starts asking questions?
Leave Green to me. I'll keep him at bay. But you've got to make it worth my while.
How? How can I do that?
Every report you send, Becklow, must be the very best you can do. Nothing second-hand. Go out and talk to the people who knew Whiteley. Knew Rayner. And write better than you've ever written before, even if it means staying up all night, every night to do it.
I'll start right away. And thanks, Mr. Parker.
Somerset House, Governor, as quick as you can.
Can I help you?
Yes, I'm looking for the volume for 1879, Births.
That wouldn't be about the Whiteley murder, would it?
How do you know?
Well, you're not the first one.
Well, who else has been asking it?
You're a reporter, aren't you?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am.
Well?
Look, I'm in a hurry.
Well, you find it at the far end of the second row of shelves. They will hang him, though, won't they?
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
He's a murderer shot down a harmless
man. Thank you. 1877, 78, 79, L2S. Damn thing's heavy. Here we are. Rayner. That's quite a few of them. I could be here all day. That's him. That's it. Born Teddington. Father, George Rayner. Mother, Emily Turner. Turner, that's interesting. His parents never married. Well, I must find out more about them. Who knows where that might lead?
Yes,
Yes? Who is it?
Is this Mr. George Rayner's house?
Yes. Who are you? What do you want?
Andrew Bowman, Bayswater Daily Chronicle.
Newspapers? No, I'm sorry. Mr. Rayner won't talk to anyone from newspapers.
Have there been others?
Too many.
Does Miss Emily Turner live here?
What do you want her for?
My name's Bowman. I'm a reporter. I'd like to speak to her
you
about...
You best be clairvoyant, then. She passed on years ago.
Oh. Are you a mother, then?
What if I am?
Well, it's about your grandson, Horace Rayner.
Oh, I expected as much. Can't hide things like that for long. Got it from his birth certificate, I suppose.
Yes, and hers. She was born here, was she?
You'd better come in. I don't want the neighbours to see me talking to you. They're a nosy lot, they are. Now, there you are. And I want you to eat up those biscuits. You look like you could do with a bit of fattening up, like a rake you are.
Oh, thanks, Mrs. Turner. It's very kind of you.
Well, I know you young fellas.
May I ask you some questions now?
I suppose if you must. But I want you to know we're a respectable family. Never got into trouble with the law before, and now this.
Could you tell me something about Horace?
Not much to tell. He was born when Emily and Mr. Rayner lived in Teddington. Lovely house they had there, all furnished by Maples.
Did you see Horace and his parents often?
Too proud they was. And Horace, when he growed up, he travelled a lot around the world. Mind you, he wasn't too proud to borrow from me when he needed it. In fact, come to think of it, the last time I saw him, he wanted to borrow £4 off of me. Never paid me back neither.
When would that be?
About 7 or 8 years ago. Truth is, Horace had ideas above himself. That's why he could never settle down proper.
Wasn't his father well off then?
Boy's still got to stand on his own 2 feet. Yeah.
Mrs. Turner, have you any idea why he shot Mr. Whiteley?
No.
Was Horace a violent man?
Lord, no. Anything but. Silly and irresponsible, maybe, but never violent. He wouldn't hurt a fly.
Then he must have had some reason for doing what he did.
Suppose he thought he had.
I don't understand.
It's no matter. No.
Did Horace know Mr. Whiteley?
You'll have to ask him that.
Mrs. Turner, look, your grandson is lying in hospital in a serious condition. He may not even live.
Better if he doesn't for everyone.
You can't mean that.
I do. We're a respectable family and he's brought shame on us.
Well, think of the greater shame if they hang him.
Lord, don't say such a thing.
Well, then tell me all you know. I mean, if he had a good reason for shooting Mr. Whiteley, the more the public knows about it, the better his chances.
What I tell you can't hurt poor Emily. She's gone, but there's Louis.
Louis?
My other daughter, Emily's older sister. Louise is her real name, but we've all called her Louis.
Well, what does she have to do with this?
Well, nothing direct, but you know how people jump to conclusions.
What conclusions?
Well...
Yes?
Louis. She knew Mr. Whiteley.
How well did she know him?
Oh, quite well. She was one of his shop assistants in the toy department.
When was this?
She'd have been about 16 at the time. Very pretty she was, and well, it all happened so long ago, I don't suppose it can do any harm if I tell you. He used to take her out driving.
Mr. Whiteley took Louis out driving? Where?
All about. I saw them sometimes when I was up that way in West London, Mr. Whiteley and my Louis in that Victoria of his. Footman dressed in that gold and scarlet. Oh, what a picture. He gave her lovely dresses. Hats and gloves too.
You mean they were...
He was very fond of her, was Mr. Whiteley.
So it would seem. Well, how long did this go on for?
Oh, quite a while. Then she went to be his housekeeper.
Housekeeper?
Oh, yes, on his farm in Finchley. He had a big place out there for the butcher shop and the vegetable shop, you know.
And Louis lived there on her own?
Now, don't you go jump into conclusions. It was all very respectable.
But Mr. Whiteley was married. I mean, didn't Mrs. Whiteley object to her husband and Louis?
No, she didn't come into it. They was, separated, him and his lady wife. You didn't know that?
No.
No. No, of course not. You weren't even born then. But what's this got to do with Horace? Oh, you don't really think they'll hang him, do you?
Well, I'm afraid public opinion's against him. I mean, everyone thinks he went to Mr. Whiteley to rob him.
Oh, no, he'd never do a thing like that. Not Horace. If you want my opinion, I think he must have been, well, you know, a bit macho-like. I've said all I have to say.
Bowman, where on earth have you been hiding yourself?
Well, just checking on some facts about the Whiteley murder.
Listen to me, Bowman. I want you to put that business right out of your mind and concentrate on your work.
But what about Horace Rayner?
Who's he?
Well, that's just the point. Who is he? He shoots down in cold blood, one of the most famous men of our time, and no one seems to know much about him or why he did it.
Well, perhaps that's because no one's really interested to know.
Well, someone must be. I mean, all the other newspapers have been filling their columns with the case. Wouldn't it be a scoop if the Bayes Board of Times was the first to come up with the answers?
I don't care about other newspapers. So long as I'm running this newspaper, rumour, tittle-tattle and scandal will be kept out of it. Now, you have your duties. Get on with them.
So, then, you found out that Horace Rayner was illegitimate and that Mr. Whiteley had a mistress, Horace's aunt. Yeah, excellent start.
Well, it came as quite a shock, I can tell you, Mr. Parker. I mean, I thought William Whiteley was above reproach. Fine, upright gentleman, generous, God-fearing, not a blemish to his character.
You're not the only one. The universal provider was universally admired.
You people have got short memories. I know what he's really like.
And who are you, sir?
Oh, this is Mr. Moffat. Well, what do you know, Mr. Moffat?
My dad had a butcher shop. Been in the family three generations. Four, if it hadn't been for that butcher. He slaughtered us when he opened up his own fresh meat department. Couldn't compete, you see. That's what happened to lots of shopkeepers hereabouts. All ruined. I had no choice. I had to go and work for him.
You work for Whiteley? But what was that like?
God, what a life. When I went to see him, he knew I was straight off. But he received me very affably.
Ah, come in, Mr. Moffat. Come in. How's your father?
A sick man, sir, since he lost the business.
Ah, that's progress, Mr. Moffat. Can't stand in the way of progress. Now, I understand you wish to work for me.
Yes.
You're a man of high morals, I take it.
Sir?
Well, my staff quarters rather cramped, you know. And young men and women being what they are. You follow me drift?
I think so.
Good. Oh, no. Considering we close at 2 o'clock on Saturday, and not later than 7 o'clock all the year round, I provide you with good food and comfortable lodgings. You've got nothing to provide for but your own pocket money and laundry. What's the very lowest possible sum that you'll come for?
That sum happened to be just double what he paid me, but under the circumstances, I had to accept his offer. First thing he did was to give me a book of rules. 176 of them. I still remember. And for each rule you broke, he fined you. Late for work, a shilling. Torn shirt, sixpence, and so on. You would easily lose a month's wages just in fines.
But most shops have rules like that, and fines.
Ah, but his were different. Well, the others, the fines went into a staff fund, but Whiteley straight into his own pocket. Do you know, he even had a special. When they'd gone, he'd prowl round the shop like a bloody lion, looking for trouble.
What sort of trouble?
Oh, anything, no matter how small. I remember one chap, worked all his life in the shop. He took a shilling. One shilling. And Whiteley caught him. Poor fella gave it back straight away, no harm done, but his rule was always prosecute. Fella got 6 months, lost his job, of course. The family ended up in the workhouse. Staff were always getting fired for the silliest reason.
Did you know about this, Mr. Parker?
There used to be stories about what went on, but no one really believed them.
Well, they're true enough, I can tell you. That's why his place kept getting burnt down.
Burnt down? You mean deliberately?
That's right.
Oh, yes, Yes, comes back to me now. For a few years, he had a lot of trouble with fire.
That's putting it mildly. In the last one, three people were killed, and he had to close his shop for weeks. Hundreds lost their jobs.
Did they ever find out who did it?
No. And if I remember correctly, there were no shortage of suspects.
I reckon it was a lady.
What lady?
Whiteley liked the girls, he did. Well, my dinner's waiting. Can't stop to chatter.
No, wait a moment. No, don't go.
Statements have been appearing in the press connecting me, George Rayner, with the man now lying in St. Mary's Hospital accused of the murder of the late William Whiteley. I feel acutely that my name has been used and published in this way. I wish, therefore, to issue this definite statement of the facts and trust that no further liberties will be taken with my name. Briefly, then, there were two sisters, one by the name of Emily Turner and the other Louisa or Louis Turner. The latter was an assistant at Whiteley's in the toy department. Miss Emily Turner was visited by me. Sometime afterwards, she informed me that she was about to give birth to a child who is the man charged with Mr. Whiteley's murder. As an infant, he was registered by Miss Turner wrongfully in my name, the only name to which he is entitled being that of his mother.
Questions won't distress you.
I knew things would have to come out after that terrible business. I still can't bring myself to think about it.
Then I'll be as brief as possible. Did you know Miss Louis Turner?
No.
George Rayner? They were friends of Mr. Whiteley.
Mr. Bowman, you'll probably find it difficult to believe this, things being so different these days between husband and wife. But in the 14 years we were together, my husband never once mentioned his private affairs to me.
You were happy, were you, you and Mr. Whiteley?
Happy? I was a loyal wife to him. I worked like a slave for him. Over a bunch of violets.
I beg your pardon?
One evening, my husband brought home a bunch of violets. I asked him about them, and he told me he'd been given them by one of his assistants.
Which assistant? Do you know?
I never asked. I didn't want to know. But he boasted to me that they'd been plucked by her own dear little fingers. Those were his very words. 25 years ago. But I still remember them as though it were yesterday. Of course, I threw the flowers out. I couldn't have them in the house, and I've never had violets in here since.
Are you sure they weren't given to him by Louis Turner? She worked in his toy department for a while.
No, I've said that name means nothing to me.
What happened when you threw the flowers out?
Well, Mr. Whiteley was very angry. But I'd had enough. Enough of him and his violets.
Is that when you separated?
I asked him to end the relationship. That made him even more angry. He had a violent temper, and if you put any obstacle in his way, he would do and say the most dreadful things. He demanded a divorce. I had young children, but that didn't worry him. He kept on at me until I had to go away. I went to Folkestone, but he followed me, tormenting me, until I had to call the police to have him removed. It's terrible to talk about these things after so long, and to a stranger.
Please, go on.
It was the worst period of my life. Such unpleasantness, such bitterness. He was one of the richest men in England, but he wouldn't give me enough to feed myself and my children. I'd helped him to build up his business, worked 14 hours a day, 6 days a week, sometimes... A man had only to prove adultery against his wife and he could have his divorce. A woman had to prove adultery and cruelty, which made it much more difficult. Adultery, unfortunately, presented no problem. But cruelty was for me the stumbling block. Which, of course, was why the law insisted on it, to protect the husbands. In the end, I had to settle for the worst of both worlds. Judicial separation, neither together nor properly severed. My children were my only consolation.
Just one more question, Mrs. Whiteley. Horace Rayner, what do you know about him?
Only what I read in the newspapers. He must have been deranged, don't you think?
No. I think he went to see Mr. Whiteley for a reason. I wondered if you had any theories as to why.
Theories? I'm much too old for theories. But I know he saved the good Lord some trouble. My husband was a condemned man.
What do you mean?
His heart. He only had a few months to live.
I didn't know that.
Dread. Meeting him.
I take it, officer, as you're guarding this door, that this is Horace Rayner's room. I am his aunt.
Yes, ma'am, I was told to expect you. But I must warn you that he's in a bit of a mess. He tried to...
Yes, yes, I know about that. Thank you, officer. You needn't stay, officer. I think I'm safe with my nephew.
Aye, ma'am. Orders.
As you please. Horace, my boy. How are you?
Well, as you can see, Aunt Louie, I aimed too low. Look, just near my temple, that's where the bullet went in. And it came out here at the side of my nose. Took my eye with it.
That's horrible.
Well, they say they'll give me an artificial one for the trial. So I look my best.
Oh, you poor boy. Are you getting enough to eat? You're so thin.
Oh, yes. The condemned man eats heartily, don't you know?
And why aren't you shaved?
They won't give me a razor in case I...
Oh, my God.
Here's a chair, ma'am. You best sit down.
Thank you. Now, Horace, listen to me. I've instructed my solicitor to represent you. You should be hearing from him very soon.
I already have. I don't really need a lawyer.
What nonsense? Of course you do.
I don't care what happens to me. What good am I to anyone? I've failed at everything I've done. I couldn't even finish myself off properly. And I've left my wife and kids in the lurch.
Your wife's young enough to take care of herself, and your children won't starve, I promise you.
Well, that's good of you, Aunt.
I'm doing it for Emily. I still feel responsible for what happened to her.
But it wasn't your fault she drank herself to death.
The people only do that when they're unhappy.
We both know why she was. Only no one will believe it.
That's why you must be properly represented.
Oh, hang me anyway. Haven't you read what they're saying about me in the newspapers? The Times called me a shiftless degenerate.
Opinions are changing, Horace. Things are beginning to come out. Some reporters even interviewed your grandmother.
But she didn't give much away.
No, but then she didn't know very much.
Oh, she knew. She couldn't help it. She's so scared people think badly of her. I can just hear her. We have a respectable family. Respectable, my...
Now, boy. Horace, I'm sure she was just trying to protect you.
From what? Still, I like that bit about you being his housekeeper. That gave me a laugh.
I was his housekeeper. For 5 long years, I earned every penny he gave me, believe me.
Oh, I do, Aunt, I do. What about Cecil? How do you explain him?
Leave Cecil out of this. It's got nothing to do with him. And I'm still very angry with you for using his name. It was unfair of you. He's done nothing to harm you.
All right, Aunt. I'll not mention darling Cecil's name again. Poor boy. Might ruin his chances in life. Chances I never had.
You had every chance in the world. George Rayner was very good to you.
Don't talk to me about that drunken old sot.
Horace.
I see now why you've hired a lawyer. just to make sure I don't say the wrong thing.
You're hopeless. Do you know that, Horace? You're quite hopeless.
Oh, entirely agree. I don't think I'm entirely to blame, do you?
I wouldn't be here if I did. But tell me, Horace, what did you hope to gain by it? You must have known Willie wouldn't part with a penny no matter what you threatened.
I never threatened him.
Oh, come now, Horace. Didn't you try just a little blackmail?
Oh, you can think what you like, Aunt. But I was really hoping he'd help me to get started again. I was pretty desperate, you know. We've got nothing. Everything's poor.
All right, Horace, if that's your story, you stick to it.
Yeah, you don't believe me, though, do you?
It doesn't matter what I believe. It's the jury you have to convince.
No, I don't think I've much chance of that.
Oh, that's always been your trouble. You give up too easily. You've got to fight in this life. Now, I've had to.
I'll remember that when they're putting the noose around my neck.
I don't know how you can be so calm about it.
Because I deserve to die. No man can commit a worse crime.
I can't condone what you did. But I think you were driven to it, and the world ought to know why.
But who'll tell it out? Will you?
I shall do what I can. I'm ready to go now, officer.
Yes, ma'am.
Goodbye, Horace. Be brave. And please, be discreet.
Oh, don't worry, Aunt. I won't embarrass anyone.
You're lucky to have someone like her on your side. You ought to be more grateful.
You think so?
Over your lawyers, that costs money, you know.
Aunt Louie's done all right for herself. And despite what she claims, she's never done a thing for my mother. No one did. They all let her drink herself to death.
Well, no good dwelling on that now. You've got to think of yourself.
You sound quite concerned for me, Constable.
I've seen a few killers in my time, some of the worst. Men who cut up their wives, women who poisoned their husbands. They was bad through and through, but I don't think you're like that.
Who could that be?
It's like a beaten railway station in the air. Yeah, what do you want? You remember me, Andy Bowman? Daily Chronicle. This is where Horace Wayne has been
held. Now, look here. Who said you could be here this afternoon?
Inspector Fuller.
Oh, the inspector, eh?
You sure about that? Why not ask me if you don't believe me?
How can I do that? I can't leave my post.
Look, only a few minutes, please.
Well, all right, but you don't go near his bed, you see? You answer questions from here.
Fair enough.
That'll do. Be quick about it.
Hello, Mr. Rayner.
I've nothing to say to any reporters. I don't even know how he got in.
Assistance.
Why can't you leave me in peace?
Because I can help you.
Help hang me, you mean?
No, that's the point. If public opinion's behind you, the charge will be reduced to manslaughter.
The public opinion of Horace Rayner is not very high.
Yeah, but it's bound to change when more facts are known.
Oh, you're an optimist, like my Aunt Louie.
Has she been to see you?
Didn't you pass her in the corridor?
What, a woman in a veil?
That's her.
Oh,
come on, get on and ask your question. First, let me, Constable. Why, Mr. Reporter, are you so keen to help me? What, as they say, are you getting out of it?
Well, I want to find out the truth.
Why?
Well, because the more I learn about Mr. Whiteley, the more I realise what kind of man he really was.
Everyone says he was a great man, a true Christian.
And what do you think?
I'll tell my story when the time comes.
What are you hiding, Mr. Rayner?
When the time comes...
All right. Look, then I'll ask you about George Rayner. A few days ago, he gave a statement to the press in which he denied he was your father. Now, why should he do that?
Because he's not my father.
You mean he was telling the truth?
Yes.
I see.
No, Mr. Reporter, you see nothing.
Did he know Mr. Whiteley?
He might have.
Oh, come now, Mr. Rayner. Your aunt and your mother were sisters.
Just let me sleep. That's a good...
Come on, that'll do.
You've asked your question.
All right, look, just one more, please. How long are Whiteley and Rayner friends?
Oh, I can't remember. Years. Till the row, I suppose.
What row?
Out, come on the double, or else.
Whiskey, please, Liz.
I need it.
We hardly see you these days, Andy. Where have you been hiding yourself?
Down here and there. Trying to find out about the man who shot Mr. Whiteley.
Oh, him. I hope they string him up.
Oh, come on now, Liz. You know a man's innocent until he's proved guilty.
You telling me he didn't do it?
But why did he do it? Look, there's a mystery, and I'm damned if I can get to the bottom of it.
No swearing, please.
Sorry.
Anyway, what difference does it make?
Well, it's like one of those jigsaw puzzles, you know. Plenty of pieces, but no pattern. Well, at least I can't see one yet. Emily Turner and Louis Turner are sisters, right? Both fine, rich gentlemen to take care of them. The men are friends till they have an argument.
You're going to the dance at the Excelsior next month, Andy. Should be great fun.
Then, years later, the son of one of the sisters goes to visit one of the gentlemen, calling himself Cecil Turner. He's penniless and desperate. The others have a fortune and only a few months to live. They have a conversation. Then, the old man comes rushing out of the office, calling for the police before he's shot down.
You never heard a word I said, did you?
What passed between them in that office, Liz? I mean, who's this Cecil Turner, and what's Sir George Lewis got to do with it all?
Oh, well, if you don't care.
What's that, Liz?
Doesn't matter. I don't have to beg from no one.
Strange girl.
Well, well, well. If it isn't our champion Inkslinger.
Hello, Mr. Moffat.
Find out anything more about Whiteley? People are still saying what a great chap he was. Wonderful father, loving husband. If only then you and I know.
What do you know, Mr. Moffat?
My throat's a bit dry for talking.
Liz, give Mr. Moffat a pint, please, and I'll have one too.
That's very spoiling of you. Much obliged.
I'm not surprised the two of you get on so well together. Birds of a feather, if you ask me.
It's my job, Liz.
Well, that's all you ever think about. Here's your beers.
Oh, thanks. Let's take them over to a table.
Ah.
Did you know Louisa Turner?
You mean Louie? Oh, yes, everyone knew Louie. She was quite famous in her day.
As what?
Whiteley's fancy piece.
The only one?
Don't make me laugh. He was like a sultan in his harem. Every girl who worked for him, no matter how young, was fair game. He owned a place not far from the shop where he'd, entertain them.
Oh.
Very last a few. Soon after she'd been there only a few months, next thing, she was out in his carriage, queening it along Queen's Way, as he used to say.
Everyone knew about it?
Oh, an open secret, you might say. It was only when he got really rich and famous did he start worrying about his reputation. And butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, but back in those days, it was different. Louis went on working for him for a while, then one day she ups and goes. We all knew what her new position would be.
His housekeeper.
Oh, she kept house for him all right. Even had a child by him.
A child? Here, wait a moment. Boy or girl?
Oh, boy. What?
Was his name Cecil?
Oh, I don't really recall. I saw him only once with his mother. Never forget me. She came into the shop one afternoon dressed to the nines. She'd been before, of course, to buy things on Whiteley's account, but this time she got the little one with her. Bold as brass, she demands to see Whiteley. Oh, in his office a few minutes. Then she comes rushing out with Whiteley right behind her.
Call yourself a universal provider. Then provide something for me and your son or else.
Don't you threaten me, you slut.
Leave me. Take your hands off me.
You get out of here.
Oh, you're going to let us starve.
You'll never get a penny from me.
Then I'll tell the world the kind of man you really are.
What did Whiteley do?
What could he do? For once, the great man was stymied. He made her some sort of promise, and she walked out of there, head held high. If the staff had had the guts, they'd have all given her three cheers. He hated him so much. In the end, of course, he got off cheap. Bought her off for a pittance. He was good at that sort of thing. Oh, yes, indeed, a past master. Never a week went by without him suing someone or being sued. But he seldom lost a case. If things looked bad for him, he'd offer the other side some money and they'd settle.
I don't suppose you know who his solicitor was in all these cases.
Well, he had a few, some of them right villains, but usually it was Sir George Lewis. All the gentry went to him.
Die, Chronicle! Get your day, Chronicle! Maurice Rayner, sit for trial at Old Bailey! Get your day, Chronicle!
Thank you for seeing me again, Mrs. Turner.
Oh, yes. What's your woman out this time?
Your daughters.
Did they go about a lot together, you know, with Mr. Whiteley and Mr. Rayner?
Oh, yes. Every weekend they was down to Brighton for the races. Mr. Whiteley had a lovely house down there. Hastings, too.
They did well for themselves, eh?
Well, why shouldn't they? It's a hard world, especially for young girls. If they've got the looks, they should use them, is what I say.
How long were the four of them friends?
Oh, quite a few years.
Then they had an argument, didn't they? Whiteley and Rayner.
How did you know about that?
Horace told me. But he didn't say what it was about. I thought perhaps you might know.
I never pried into what wasn't my business. Not like some others I could mention.
You must have had some idea.
What if I did?
Look, Horace's trial is coming up in a few days.
Oh, all right. Oh, God knows, I can't sit by and let the boy hang, no matter what he's done. Yes, Mr. Whiteley and Mr. Rayner quarrelled, a flaming row they had, and nearly went to court over it. Mr. Whiteley accused Mr. Rayner of slander.
What did Rayner say about Whiteley?
Oh, it was all so long ago.
Oh, please, Mrs. Turner.
Mr. Rayner said that Mr. Whiteley and Emily...
Whiteley and Emily? What about
them? No, that's enough. You let my poor girl rest in peace.
That Whiteley and Emily were lovers, is that it?
Go away. Leave us alone. We're a respectable family.
Tell me, Parker, what's young Bowman been up to lately?
Up to, Mr. Green?
Yes, he's never where he should be. He's not still snooping into the Whiteley business, is he?
I'm sure he wouldn't do that, Mr. Green. Not after you told him not to.
I hope you're right. His idea's above himself, that young man. If he goes on like this, coming and going as he pleases, he'll be out on his ear.
I'll tell him what you said. Nope, I've told you.
Thanks, Mr. Parker. I suppose there's bound to come. But I can't stop now. I mean, the editor of the Chronicle's been so pleased with my reports that he's asked me to attend the trial.
Oh, good for you, Andrew. Surely, wouldn't do any harm to show your face in the office now and then.
Excuse me. Do you know if a reporter called Bowman's in here this evening?
Yeah, I'm Bowman.
Well, Lady McCabe wants to speak to you.
Oh? Does she have a name?
No. She never told me.
Well, what do you think, Mr. Parker? Should I go?
You're old enough to take care of yourself, Andrew.
All right. Gabby, lead the way.
I'm Lily Turner. My mother tells me you've been annoying her.
Well, just doing my job, Miss Turner.
A nasty one, if you ask me.
Why do you want to speak to me?
To tell you... No, to ask you, not to dig too deeply into the past. Those of us who've lived through it don't wish to have it paraded before the world.
It's a bit late now. I mean, you should have thought of that at the time.
My, what a hard young man you are.
Look, Miss Turner, I'm a reporter. All I want is to get to the truth.
And further your career at the same time, no doubt.
Miss Turner, that
doesn't seem... not really blaming you for that. But because of what Horace has done, a lot of unpleasant things are likely to come to light, which are better forgotten. Whatever harm he caused, Mr. Whiteley made up for it. You read about his will, I'm sure.
And that's how you'd like him to be remembered, eh? Good, kind, generous. Not as the monster he really was.
Monster? Willie, a monster? Oh, no, Mr. Bowman, try as you might, you'll never convince me of that. Oh, I'm not denying that sometimes he was a bad boy. But he'd spent his youth working hard, building up a great business. He could afford to sow his wild oats. I think in many ways he was a fine man.
Nevertheless, you're not sorry he got his just desserts. I mean, after all, he didn't treat you very well.
Oh, I've no complaints.
What about your son?
Leave Cecil out of this. Now, what Horace did has nothing to do with us.
On the contrary, it seems to me that it's all connected. I mean, you and Whiteley, Emily and George Rayner, and between you, poor Horace, not knowing whose son he was.
Oh, I'll take you back to your friends now.
Now, wait, I have a question, Miss Turner.
And I don't have to answer it.
Whiteley was deceiving you with your sister, wasn't he?
I wasn't Willie's keeper.
And Emily fell pregnant.
She was so drunk, sometimes she didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah, but you knew and Rayner knew. That's why he and Whiteley nearly went to court. But Whiteley settled before they did. He probably paid Rayner to keep quiet and to put his name to the birth certificate as the father of the child Emily bore.
Cabby, drive back to the King's Arms, quickly. You go too far, Mr. Bowman.
Sir George Lewis acted for Mr. Whiteley, did he not?
How do you know that?
Well, that was the name Horace used to get to see Mr. Whiteley. He knew about the row between Whiteley and Rayner because he was the cause of it.
Whiteley's solicitor, were you not?
I was.
You handled all his legal business?
At that time, yes.
Business as well as personal?
Yes.
Your client was involved in numerous actions, was he not?
Not more than most men of his standing.
Do you know the accused?
No.
On the day in question, did you authorise the accused to go to Mr. Whiteley or to use your name?
Sir George has said he does not know the accused. That should be answer enough.
Sir George?
I did not.
You acted for Mr. Whiteley many years ago when an action for slander was brought against him by Mr. George Rayner.
I did.
Can you give the court any details about that action?
I cannot. The information is privileged between myself and my client.
Your client, Sir George, is dead.
Sir George is perfectly correct. The information is privileged.
What a hard man the judge is, Mr. Parker. He won't let any evidence about Horace's background.
I'm afraid he's well known for his strictness. If it's irrelevant, it's kept out.
But it is relevant. Everything depends on it.
Well, perhaps Louis Turner will reveal it all.
I wonder.
Did you introduce your sister, Emily, to Mr. Whiteley?
I might have.
And is it correct to say that a friendship sprang up between Emily and Mr. Whiteley?
We were all friends, the four of us.
During this time, two children were born. Horace Rayner was one, the other was Cecil...
My lord, I object to the defence's line of questioning. What happened nearly 30 years ago is entirely irrelevant.
On the contrary, my lord, the full story of my client's life and the details of his birth will tend towards showing his frame of mind when he went to visit Mr. Whiteley.
Are you saying your client was disturbed in his mind?
Very much so, my lord.
I still cannot see the connection. The objection is sustained.
Things aren't going too well for Rayner.
Were you surprised? Between the judge and the prosecution, nothing about Whiteley's shabby past is going to be allowed to come out. Still, Horace will soon get his chance to tell his own story.
I'm calling him now.
To tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
What a state he's in. He has had a shave in weeks, and he's trembling like a leaf. Oh, that awful glass eye. He looks more like a tramp than a murderer.
They could be to his advantage. The jury are bound to feel sympathy for him.
You're right. I think they already do.
Please tell the court what happened on the day of the shooting.
I left my rooms at midday and went to Mr. Whiteley's office. I said I was Cecil Turner from Sir George Lewis. A small pretense, I'm afraid, but I had to say something to get in to see him, and I knew that both names would stir his memory. I was right. As soon as I'd closed the door, he challenged me.
Mr. Whiteley.
Oh, you're not Cecil Turner.
No, I'm Horace Rayner, Emily Turner's son. You must remember her, surely.
Ah, what do you want?
My mother told me on her deathbed that if I ever needed help, I was to come to you. I need your help now. Ah. I haven't a job, and I have no money. My wife's expecting her third child, and we've pawned everything.
Oh, I see, I see. Oh, what can you do? What's your training?
I've been a clerk and a commission agent. I've also travelled a great deal. Europe, Russia, and I know a few languages.
Mm-hmm. None of it very practical.
Yes, that's George Rayner's fault. He educated me to be a rich man's son.
Oh. Well, how would you like to go abroad?
I would, sir, very much. But I need capital. You can't do much without it these days.
Oh, nonsense. Plenty of young men go without capital. Do very well for themselves, do.
But our affairs. There'll be five of us, and I haven't a penny.
Look, why don't you apply to one of those emigration agencies?
What do you mean?
The Salvation Army. Now, you say that you're destitute, and they're bound to assist you.
You mean you won't help us?
No. Oh, no, certainly not. No, you thought because I'd listened to your cock and bull story, I'd hand you a job on a plate, eh? No, oh no, you're mistaken, sir. No, you don't know William Whiteley.
You've condemned me to death.
Yeah, what have you got there? Now,
Put that gun away.
I made up my mind before I came here to kill myself if you refused me.
Don't talk, Jack, man.
I'm serious.
You don't frighten me, sir. Hey, it's Goodman. Yes, fetch a policeman straight away.
No, please come back. I'm not asking much from you.
Not this time. Goodman, don't just stand there. Go.
Let's just talk.
Oh, it's too late, lad.
Then we're both dead men.
Horace Rayner, did you go to see Mr. Whiteley with the intention of killing him?
No. It was the last thing in my mind. I just wanted him to help me. He owed it to me.
You believed he was your father?
Why should my dying mother lie to me?
Yes, a manslaughter. Well, it depends on how the judge directs him and you've seen what he's like. All he wants is to get the trial over before tea.
The issues in this case are very simple. You've heard much from the defence about the accused's past, and there have been strenuous efforts to blacken the deceased's reputation in the futile hope that this might explain the accused's behaviour. As none of it is relevant, I think you may safely disregard everything you have heard. You have also heard from doctors who examined the accused that he was not insane at the time of the shooting. So a defense of insanity must also fail. That he was in desperate straits, that he lived...
Have the jury reached their verdict?
We have, my lord.
Do you find the accused guilty or not guilty of murder?
Guilty.
Silence in court!
The jury have reached a correct verdict, and speedily, too. I thank them. Horace Rayner, it is quite clear to me from all we've heard that in full possession of your senses, you went to Mr. Whiteley on that fateful day to blackmail him, and if that failed, to kill him. I cannot, therefore, hold out to you the slightest hope that the sentence of the law will not be carried into effect. And I call upon you most earnestly to spend the time before your execution in serious communication with your Maker.
Mustang, says judge. Read full report of trial. Don't you dive, Chronicle.
Save him, do you think?
Well, there was such an outcry after the trial. I think he's got a chance.
I hope so.
Ah, you're a good sort, Liz. Oh, by the way, that dance at the Excelsior. You accepted any invitations yet?
No.
Good, because I thought we might go together.
Oh.
I can afford it now.
Why, Andy? What's happened?
I've got a job on the Daily Chronicle.
Oh.
I start next week.
Oh, Andy, I knew you'd do it. I just knew it.
Hot. The remarkably short time it took to try Horace Rayner and find him guilty, just 6.5 hours, took the majority of people by surprise. It seemed almost to amount to indecent haste, and created the impression in the minds of many that he did not have a fair fight for his life. People from all walks of life, heads of business houses, men and women of wealth and title, pressed the Home Secretary to reprieve Rayner. As a result of this overwhelming sympathy in his favour, the Home Secretary commuted his sentence to 20 years imprisonment. Rayner, however, remained indifferent to his fate.
I just want to sleep. Give me something to sleep. There's a good chap.
He tried once more to commit suicide. Again he failed. But for the rest of his sentence, he was a model prisoner. After serving 12 years, he was released, returning to the obscurity from whence he'd come, a broken man. He lived for only 2 more years and died at the age of 43, convinced to the end that William Whiteley, the universal provider, was his father.
Willie's Wild Oats was written by Jack Gratis with Chris Harris as Andy Bowman. The rest of the cast, Rayner, John Telfer, Whiteley, Hedley Goodall, Green, David Sinclair, Moffat, Norman Henry, Fuller, Rex Holdsworth, Goodman and George Rayner, Ian Thompson, Mrs. Whiteley, Audrey Noble, Mrs. Turner, Anne Jameson, Liz, Carolyn Moody, Louis, Mia Soteriou, Parker, Paul Nicholson, and Lewis, David Ponting. Other parts were played by Robin Ardra, Norman Henry, Rex Holdsworth, and David Ponting. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller.